Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand, this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening and welcome to Yada Yada Radio. We've got Kirk and I here. We may have JB later in the program. I haven't seen his telephone number come up on the switchboard, but he can manage himself in. How are you, Kirk?
I'm doing pretty good, thank you.
Good. We had a productive program. We actually finished your research on both the events of the Exodus, the plagues of the Exodus, demonstrating that they actually occurred, and then followed by the events in Egypt and in Israel following the Exodus, and particularly the Amalekites and their nature and the verifications of their existence throughout history. And particularly now, making the connection between the nature of the Amalekites and the nature of Islam, and why Yahweh was so opposed to it. So it was a probably 7 or 8 programs or 5 or 6 programs we devoted to
That I'm aware of off the hand. There are a few little gaps in there, but and it proved that the university lied and God told the truth.
That is correct. Yes.
What can I tell you?
Yep.
Yeah.
I had the opportunity, and it was in try to keep the conversation as anonymous as possible, but to have another conversation with someone who was advocating conspiracy theories, in particular the Pizzagate conspiracy theory that the Clintons were running a satanic pedophile ring out of a pizza parlor. Where they engaged in ritualistic child murder and all these sorts of things. And it really is was debilitating to me when I see these kinds of things. I think everybody knows my position on them, which is there are a few conspiracies that have some truth to them, although they do very little good at all to discuss because the connections are tenuous, and the end result is that you really don't gain anything by conveying them, and you lose a lot because there's nothing that is more destructive to a person's credibility than a conspiracy. And it particularly was a concern of mine, Kirk, and you and I talked about this, is because my primary audience, I realize that most of the people who have chosen to become part of Yahweh's Covenant family as a result of these programs and the books that I've had the opportunity to write on Yahweh's testimony have been Gentiles. But a lot of Yehudim have joined the Israelites, have joined the Covenant family as a result, and that has always been my target audience because it's Yahweh's target audience.
Certainly.
And there is no group of people throughout history that have been victimized by conspiracy theories and fake news than the Jews. And so if you have a message that is impregnated in any way with conspiracy and fake news, you've rendered it irrelevant, moot.
Yeah, very much.
Impotent, yeah, to those, the Jews who have been victimized by it for years. In fact, a lot of the conspiracies involve Jews. One of the major conspiracies in the world in the 20th century was the protocols of the Elders of Zion.
It was a complete
and total hoax. It was based upon a French novel. They just changed the names of the characters and created this myth that became extraordinarily popular. I mean, in Europe and in many places in America, the majority of people believed that the protocols of the Elders of Zion was true, and that the Jews were plotting to control the world. And it was a complete and utter fabrication. And it was an obvious fraud. I mean, it would take 15 minutes of someone's time to demonstrate that it was fraud. And it's still popular. Yeah. And, of course, then there's the Jewish banker theory. The Jewish bankers control the world. And, there's some wealthy and influential Jewish bankers, but mm-hmm. Having them control the world is just nonsense.
They're very good as they are, man.
Oh, man. I hear stories like the Pizzagate story. That was just so devastating to me. Is it, okay, is there a shred of truth? Well, there's a shred of truth in every lie. There's a shred of truth in Paul's letters.
Mm-hmm.
Every lie. The Quran has a shred of truth. There is nothing that convinces large numbers of people to believe that which is untrue that doesn't intermix truth and lies.
Mm-hmm.
So, you can make a defense of something and say, well, Bill Clinton is a sexual pervert. Yes, he is.
Yeah.
The slave trade, and particularly sex trade, is proliferating around the world. Yes, that's
mm-hmm.
true.
Yes.
Politicians are corrupt, lying scumbags. Yes, that's true. There are nefarious organizations that make money in human trafficking. That's true. There are a really tiny infinitesimal number of people in this world that actually do something that must just really piss off Satan, and that is worship Satan as Satan.
That's interesting.
But even that infinitesimal percentage of people is probably not even 1 in 100,000 that do that. They aren't drinking children's blood. They aren't killing little children.
No.
And so to take tidbits here and there, the things that are true, but to try to weave them together to come up with an explanation and come up with Pizzagate is just stunningly ridiculous. Now, the person I was talking to by the last exchange that I had with them today, they said, listen, I happen to agree with most things you said, and I understand why it's a concern, and, I'll back away from these. That's good. But then I received mm-hmm. a letter from somebody that said that 95% of the covenant people that they associate with believe in conspiracies. Well, Kirk, if that's true, I'm in the wrong place, doing the wrong thing, and I really don't want to be here anymore, if that's true.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't want to be here anymore.
That would be horrible.
So I'm going to, there's a lot of people that have become effective translators, and there's people that are articulate, know Yahweh really well, but I don't want to be part of something that the preponderance of people are conspiracy advocates. Now, it is my conclusion, and I'm just going to share this because then we're going to get into back into First Chronicles. But this is a big deal to me. This is go no go for me as it relates to this program and continuing to do anything other than just write and post the books to whoever wants to read them. I've come to see conspiracy is almost indistinguishable from religion.
Mm-hmm.
With a conspiracy advocate, they will believe the most preposterous, crazy lies. Now, chemtrails is one of them, that the government is secretly poisoning us what comes out of the back of airplane engines, that 9/11 was an inside government job, that Sandy Hook and the Pace nightclub and the Boston Marathon were all set ups by the U.S. government, perpetrated to achieve some political means, but none of them actually happened as they are reported. These are examples of the Pizzagate story, the most recent one.
Mm-hmm.
That those who believe in them have a religious zeal for them. Evidence and reason do not matter.
Apparently not.
And, and it's almost impossible to dissuade a conspiracy advocate from it. They spend a lot of time reinforcing what they believe. And conspiracy theories actually emerge the same way religion does. Chaotic world that people feel is either threatening or that they don't understand. And they don't understand why people are doing these horrible things, and they seek an explanation, and they either use religion or conspiracy theory or both to explain what they're witnessing.
This blows me away.
And it blows me away, too. And so I wanted to know, and I just did this in the moments prior to this program, the 5 minutes before it, what percentage of Americans, what percentage of people around the world believe in conspiracy, and how is a conspiracy theory defined? And I read some things that were troubling. It's certainly not in the 95 percentile range, but it was still troubling. The first is a definition of conspiracy. It's an explanation that makes reference to hidden, malevolent forces seeking to advance some nefarious aim. That all conspiracies are untrue, but they all contradict a commonly accepted explanation for some phenomenon we witness in society. We think of conspiracy theories as simply another form of magical thinking, the faith, really. And as with all types of magical thinking, myth, people engage in conspiracy in order to cope with the chaos they're witnessing in the world.
That may be more than enough there for me. That's why they do.
Yeah, it's
comforting to them. Blame somebody.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons that I'm so opposed to them now is that Yahweh's explanation as to why people do bad things is really straightforward.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
sex, power, and money. Sex, power, and money. And Yahweh's very clear that Satan's influence in all this is de minimis. Yeah, he influenced Paul for sure. He influenced Muhammad for sure. But very few people are actually satanically influenced. And there's nobody worshiping Satan that's actually demon-possessed. Satan is irritated by somebody worshiping him as Satan. So Satan's role is grossly exaggerated. And the overwhelming preponderance of people in leadership positions around the world aren't working as part of the Bilderberger organization. They're not working as part of some Council on Foreign Relations. They're not part of the Illuminati. They're not 33rd degree Freemasons. The vast preponderance of leaders around the world are in it for their own self-aggrandizement.
Sure.
They're using politics or the military or the media or religion to make a buck, to gain influence, to be more popular sexually.
Yeah, that's right. Sex, power, and money.
Sex, power, and money. That's why Muhammad created Islam.
Yeah.
Some people do it for other reasons. I don't think Paul created Christianity for sex, power, and money. I think he did it because he just hated. I think that he hated the rabbis. I think he hated Yahweh. He hated life, and HaSatan gave him this opportunity to become one of the most famous people in the world. And sometimes fame is the fourth category, and of course Paul did it for fame.
Yeah.
So
there's nothing wrong with that.
As we look at these, the big three conspiracy theories in America are first of all, the most popular for a number of years here in America was called the Truther conspiracy. And the Truther conspiracy is, of course, the lie that 9/11 was an inside job. 19% of Americans still believe that 9/11 was perpetrated by the U.S. government. I mean, it's stunningly preposterous to believe that 19% of Americans, which is, say 20% of
that's 60 million
people in America.
At least,
believe that 9/11 was an inside job. That's the Truther conspiracy. Then there's the birther conspiracy, where 25% of Americans think that Obama was born in Kenya or someplace else out of the United States, and that he's actually a Muslim. Obama's religion was Obama.
Yeah, like most politicians.
He claimed to be a Christian. He was educated in grammar school as a Muslim. He was indoctrinated as an adult in socialist secular humanism. He was equal parts social secular humanism, a radical interpretation of Christianity, and he had an affinity for Islam. But he was born in Hawaii. A birth certificate shows he was born in Hawaii. And why do you care? What is it going to matter?
Yeah.
What are you going to do about it? Why even go there? And why is his religion important? I don't care what his religion is.
Yeah. Let me ask you something.
Value to anybody. Yeah.
Based on that, my question would be to all this is, even if there's a threat of truth to something, well, how does that advance the Torah?
Right.
Yahweh
spends an inordinate amount of time
exposing
and condemning politics, militarism, and religion.
Yeah. Well,
he does it over and over again. I'm right now translating Yirmiyah 23, and he's saying, pastors are scum, and I'm going to hold them accountable. And so Yahweh is constantly exposing and condemning religion and politics and militarism.
Yeah.
And it's appropriate for us to do so because there is no way that anybody is going to even consider what God has to say while they have an affinity for man's political, religious, or military systems. You've got to let go of those things. So it's appropriate for us to take time to criticize them. But what good does it do to say, well, the U.S. government perpetrated 9/11 when all of the evidence is contrary to that?
Yeah.
What does it do good to say that Obama wasn't born in the United States?
What difference does it make?
When they elected him,
he was president, he did his thing, and he got his money, now he's collecting.
Look at Afghanistan and Iraq, and Libya. Yeah. How the United States' involvement in those three areas all was based on a pile of lies and made bad situations infinitely worse. Look at our economy, our bankrupt system, our entitlement system.
Besides the big three, there's you've rightfully attacked the economic systems, the media, because they are the propaganda people, and the University of Higher Education. We've talked about that multiple times.
Right.
How
that's where the great shrines are to socialist secularism.
Those are the big six right there.
That's where the priesthood is.
In a nutshell. Yeah.
And so there have been a recent number of polls here recently that typically as many as anywhere from 15,000 to 20,000 people surveyed. So these are big polls.
Sure.
The fastest growing conspiracy in the world right now? Flat Earth.
Something about the Jews?
No, Flat Earth.
Oh, come on.
Flat Earth. That the Earth is really flat. Do you know that 6% of Americans believe that Osama bin Laden is still alive?
Why would you do that?
Why would you go there? 21% of voters say that a UFO crashed in Roswell, New Mexico. and the United States government is covering it up. 21% of you.
Mm.
Folks, there has never been a UFO, an alien life form that has come to this planet. It can't be done. Until we are transformed into light, we ain't going anywhere.
We can't do it either. Yeah.
Mankind's not even going to go to Mars, much less out of this solar system. 28%
of Americans. Matter, you can't travel.
28% of Americans believe that Saddam Hussein was involved in the 9/11 attacks. Hey, come on.
That's stupid.
Oh, God. He
That's
was
really
so anti-fundamentalist Islam and jihadists that if you were a jihadist, a fundamentalist Muslim in Iraq, you were dead. He'd kill
you. He was a bath party. He was more like a Nazi, you know, like a dictator.
Do you know that 7% of those that believe that 9/11 was an inside job think that it was perpetrated by the Mossad?
I've heard that, yes, yes. Remember the first thing that they did to the Jews as far as propaganda against them? The first one is all the stuff I was reading is when they decided that somewhere between the Greco-Roman periods, they decided to call the Jews the Hyksos because everybody hated the Hyksos. The Amalekites.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, conspiracies against Jews for thousands of years.
From day one.
Yeah. 20%.
Well, I mean, isn't that what the Pharaoh said to him? He said, you know, these people are going to get us because they keep breeding and they're going to take us over.
Right.
We have to enslave them.
That's right. 20% of Americans, adults, believe there's a direct link between childhood vaccines and autism. I mean, that lie has been disproven so many times. And the author of the lie has been discredited, and yet 20% of Americans, and my guess is it's probably half of Texans, believe there's a link between vaccines and autism. 7% think the moon landing was faked. 13% think that Barack Obama is the Antichrist.
He's not that good.
29% believe that aliens exist and have visited the planet. 9% think the government adds fluoride to water for sinister reasons. I mean, come on. 4%. This is amazing. And by the way, this number is growing. And you can find there's probably 20 articles on this. 4% of American voters believe that lizard people control our society by gaining political power. I don't know what they call it when a person, when an alien can morph into a different form and take human form, but these lizard people are aliens.
Those are pod people. I saw the movie in 54.
4% is just one of the big ones. 14% believe in Bigfoot. Okay, that's harmless. No, there is no Bigfoot, but it is harmless. That's harmless. 15%
and your whole day out in the woods, if that's what thrills you, go in.
Yeah. 15% of voters said that the government or the media adds mind-controlling technology to their TV broadcast.
The government, that smart body of people, right.
They just have such disgusting programs that they're lowering America's collective IQ. 5% believe that the exhaust, of all of the conspiracies, this is the dumbest. 5% believe that the exhaust thing behind the sky in the sky behind airplanes is actually chemicals sprayed by the government for sinister reasons. I mean, that one probably because it's the most preposterous and the most easily disproved, and there isn't a shred of evidence in favor of it. It's just to think that 5% of Americans believe that is mind-boggling to me. 15% of Americans think that the medical industry and the pharmaceutical industry invent new diseases to make money.
No.
Now, the number one conspiracy in the world today is that there's a secret group controlling the world, and that this group is a derivative of the Illuminati, and that they're all in it to these globalists are part of organizations like the Freemasons, and they're Jews, and they're the Bilderbergers, and that they're in it to be globalists and to control the world. Now, I'm here to tell you, There is no one associated with the Bilderbergers or Freemasons or even the Jews who's going to influence the Torahless one known to Christians as the Antichrist.
Yeah.
And when he sees his power, it's not going to be based upon a New World Order movement.
No.
Was there a group called the Order of the Enlightened? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Did Adam Weishaupt try to promote his agenda through the Freemasons? Yes. Did they have an influence amongst the Jacobins in the French Revolution? Absolutely. Did they have influence with at least two Americans, Washington and Franklin? Yeah, in all likelihood.
Mm-hmm.
So what?
Yeah, so what?
So what? So what? You know, I spent an inordinate amount of time a long time ago. I read everything there is to read on conspiracy. I mean, I went to the cheap little 200-page big print. I want to sell a conspiracy book. I'm talking about reading Abe Burrell's the Memoirs and History of Jacobinism, which provides every document that was ever found on Adam Weishaupt.
I'd love to play in your library one day.
Yeah, I've read I read the Quran is one of those that is woven into all of this. And you know, I've analyzed the Quran every which way. Paul's writings, of course, analyzed them every which way. The creature from Jekyll Island. None dare call it conspiracy. Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, which is just an insider admitting that conspiracies are real. I mean, you name it, I've read it. I actually went to the oldest Babylonian tablets, the most recent tablets that have been unearthed and translated from Babylon that present the oldest depiction of the Babylonian religion. And I tried to do what Hislop failed. Have you ever read The Two Babylons? It's an unreadable text, Hislop's book. And so what I thought maybe what could be done is to have a methodical migration or evolution, if you will, from the first Babylonian religion to the Egyptian religion to the Greek religion to the Roman religion to Christianity, and just take it all the way through. And what you find is that there's far more dissimilarities than there are similarities. And there's any attempt to try to say, well, here's how the various gods were developed and interworked and how the religion was practiced, there are far more dissimilarities than similarities. And so the grand unification of conspiracy is this just giant muddled cesspool where the connections are extraordinarily tenuous and weak. And even if you could, which I don't think you can, create this grand unification theory of conspiracy, the ending text would either be so cherry-picked as to be worthless. Or so long and convoluted, there's the smartest purpose in the world to follow it. Right. Yeah. And so after I had spent, 6 months really devoted myself to studying everything I could find on conspiracy, studying, international banking, you name it. I studied it.
Yeah.
I came to the conclusion, this is just this giant cesspool for credibility. Don't go there. And that would be my advice to people. Don't go there. There's absolutely no merit in it. You sound crazy. It's like when Muslims say the Holocaust didn't happen.
Yeah. Who are you kidding?
Yeah. You just come across as ignorant.
Did no one see all those films, black and white films, that taken by the Americans and the British armies at Auschwitz and all this place with all the bodies? And I mean, what do you think that was?
Look, but the Germans documented it. And I've been to those concentration camps. You can go and see the mountains of shoes, the mountains of bones.
Well, they were shoveling bodies with a tractor to throw them into the big ditches when they and making the guards do all the work. You know, with the gun,
like,
with the army standing there with guns in that film. It was they show those films for years.
To
just like,
create, to believe the myth that that was staged, just like to believe the myth that, that the Boston Marathon, you know, the people who were wounded, the whole thing was faked. And that Sandy Hook, the people, the children who lost their lives, and the Pace nightclub, that that was all faked by the government to for some sinister purpose. You are literally throwing away your credibility. And if you want to do that, that's your choice.
Yeah.
Just don't do it anywhere around Iowa. You know, the issue here is an important one. Yahweh's nature and his testimony is so contrary to what people around the world have been led to believe.
Mm-hmm.
That when you present what Yahweh is really like, what he is offering, what he is opposed to, for example, everybody thinks that religions are a path to God, and yet God hates all religions. People think that their military is something that they should be loyal to, appreciate, honor, because it provides them their freedom. And Yahweh says, no, it does exactly the opposite. I despise it. And so Yahweh's testimony, he is not a Lord. He's the antithesis of a Lord, that Satan is actually the Lord, according to Yahweh. His testimony is so contrary to what people have been told to believe that if you have even the slightest nick in your credibility because you're promoting chemtrails or false flags or pizza gates, it's just over with any rational person. You're never going to have the opportunity to take the next step. And if what you're doing appeals to, if the mixture of conspiracy and Yahweh's testimony appeals to someone that you're talking to, then you want to be really careful. Like I told this person that I was communicating with today that the last thing I want is people who are willing to believe in conspiracies to attest to the validity of the testimony found in Yada Yah or an introduction to God.
Mm-hmm.
And my hope is that those who come to know Yahweh there are rational and logical and driven by the compelling nature of the testimony, and that they're not susceptible to such ridiculous ideas. Because if they're susceptible to religious or to ridiculous ideas, you're saying, well, what's to say then if they believe that chemtrails are the government poisoning us, and the same person believes that Yahweh's testimony is reliable? Doesn't that devalue the second?
Of course. Listen, the way I view it, we have so short a period of time to share Yahweh's testimony, and it's going to get worse and worse and worse as we go, because we really are spiraling down to the last 10, at the most case 12 years, but let's say 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 10 to 12 years, something like that.
And I look at like what you've been writing on observations, and I'm reading this stuff, and these are the signposts along the way, and one of them, of course, is the Torah, his voice, his written word, his actual places that you can look at and glean things like this threshing field and so forth and so on. And these are all the pathways to showing you the pathway to Yahweh. What do you want to talk about when you've got so little time? What is important? Yahweh doesn't, there's nothing along the signpost along the way that says, oh, by the way. I understand, see, I'm even less attacking of government stuff and all, although I agree with you that you should, but I don't have enough time in the day to study all that stuff. I want to study the Torah. I want to learn more what Yahweh has to say. I want to shut up and listen. I mean,
somebody
on your show,
room, for example,
this is where you talk about
died.
All the time. I delighted in it. The first time I heard your show, I just said, wow. And never stopped for 10 years. I'm delighted I get to participate. It's just thrilling. That's the part that grabs me. That's the part that
there's a person in our chat room that is promoting conspiracy. YHWH soldier. I don't know who they are. I don't want to know who they are. But it just disgusts me. I mean, I am angry. I am disgusted. Do not want to be part of a group that promotes such nonsense.
Yeah.
I don't want to be part of it. So, you know, if this is what you want to do,
y'all do it alone.
You know, let's just say that the person who wrote me the email was wrong and it's not 95%, that it's 25%. I'm still out of here.
Yeah. I understand your feelings.
I don't want to be associated with stupid people. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm right all the time. I'm not.
No.
But good God, you know, if there's one thing that separates the approach that I found is presented in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms regarding Yahweh, is that he wants us to think our way to him. There's only one thing that differentiates Dode from everybody else who's ever lived. One thing, and one thing alone. He was brilliant.
Yeah,
yes.
He got it.
He got it. He was right. He thought his way to God.
Yeah. And that made him so dead.
And so the entire purpose of all of these books are, here's the evidence. You can think your way to God.
With nobody but
25% of the people that are listening, even 25%, if they have religious beliefs and this conspiracy nonsense, then I've wasted my time and I'm in the wrong place.
Yeah, wrong venue.
So I don't know how prevalent it is.
Yeah.
But I'm going to tell you that if it's anywhere close to, if it's even one-fourth of what I was told today, I'm out of here. And I'm going to make no apologies about it. I'm just out of here. When I see what is being written, I don't want any part of it. And I know that there are those who are even frustrated with me for talking about this as opposed to not just talking about the Torah, but...
No, this is pretty darn important. Let's cut out the wheat from the chaff. I mean, hell, either let's do it or let's don't do it.
If you want to believe in conspiracy, please go away. Just please go away. If you don't want to go away and you want to promote conspiracy, then I'll go away. It's really just that simple. But it makes me sick to my stomach. All right. I want to return to words of the time. It's Chronicles. Chronicles, while we're talking about this, there's some really interesting things here in Chronicles. And fortunately, most of it is, you can read the same thing in Shamuel. For example, there's a conflict in Chronicles and Shamuel on the on Aruna and his threshing floor. In Chronicles, it says that it was with Onan, not with Aruna. And it was 500 shekels, not the shekels of gold, 500 or 600, I've forgotten, versus I think it's 600 in one and 50 in the other.
Yeah,
and so somebody wrote me and says, what's the deal with this conflict?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, we're well aware of it, that the Chronicles has, I think, 500 or 600 shekels in Onan versus Aruna and 50.
Mm-hmm.
And so what would you think the first thing that we should do if you have that question? What would be the first thing you would do?
Well, I know what you did, but it's the same thing I would come through first to go look it up because I've done it multiple times. You go in the Dead Sea Scrolls and see if we got any old sources.
You betcha. First thing.
Validate something.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So the book of Shamuel, which, by the way, in its original was not First and Second Shamuel. It's just one. It's just Shamuel.
Shamuel.
Yeah, period. Not one and two.
Mm-hmm.
in the Dead Sea Scrolls Bible, which is, you know, it's a tool that I use only because it tells you what's available and it tells you what the differences are. It's useless for translation. It is helpful so that you know what the differences are between the Masoretic text and what's found in the Dead Sea Scrolls. That's all it has, the value. And so I use it for that. It has 44 pages, I think, of Shamuel Samuel. 44 pages between the various Dead Sea Scrolls. That's a lot of material.
Mm-hmm.
44 pages. As a matter of fact, the chapter that's discussing this meeting with Aruna, the Yabusi, most of the chapter is there. That particular section isn't, but most of the chapter's there. So then I looked at Chronicles. Do you know how much of Chronicles exists in the Dead Sea Scrolls?
No, sir.
Parts of four verses. There's like three words on in one verse, four in another, seven in another, and like three in the next.
That much.
Maybe 15 words of the entire Chronicle is in the Dead Sea Scrolls. Now, was there a person named Chronicle?
No, sir.
But is there even a Hebrew word for Chronicle?
No.
No. There's no Hebrew word for Chronicle. There was no person named Chronicle. Chronicle, therefore, was not a contemporary of Dode, was he?
No, not at all.
Was the Shamuel a real person?
He was indeed.
Was he a contemporary of Dode?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And is his name a Hebrew name?
Yes, sir. Samuel.
Yeah. Can I go one step further? Was Shamuel a prophet?
Yes, indeed.
Do we know that for certain?
Yes, sir. Because prophets come true in all time.
As a matter of fact, I think that Shamuel was the third prophet in the history of our planet. Moshe was the first. Now, by the way, being a prophet for Yahweh is, it is a tremendous honor. I'm not laughing. I mean, it's a tremendous honor. I mean, a tremendous honor. I'm not one, and I've never claimed to be one. It is, but it is a tremendous honor for the very few people that have been a prophet of Yahweh. But keep in mind that their only qualification was that they were willing to do the job,
mm-hmm.
and they would convey what Yahweh told them. Now, occasionally, a prophet goes a little further and conveys their own interpretation of what Yahweh has said, and they're inspired to do so. Moshe and Devarim is his Yahweh inspiring him to go beyond what he had conveyed, to explain what he had conveyed. So Moshe was the first. Yosha, Ben Nun, who followed Moshe, was the second.
Mm-hmm.
Shamuel was the third. And the fourth was Dode.
Dode, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And by the way, Dode, his parting words. Well, I just finished translating Dode's parting words. And then made a running commentary on it in chapter 13 of Observations. It moved me to tears. Just amazing. But Dode, first thing he says about himself, I'm a prophet of Yahweh. You know, everybody wants to think of Dode as a king or the boy that threw the stone at Goliath or the shepherd or, you know, everything but.
Yeah.
But I think that in terms of prophet, I think that he was the greatest of all the prophets. Because he covered the most material, you know, 100 Mizmor Psalms and somewhere between 20 and 25 Mashal Proverbs. So Dode is is an extraordinary individual. He is a person that thought his way to Yahweh. He's the person that Yahweh loved most in the entire world, and. Now, this happens to be from Chronicles, but it's the same story is verified in Shamuel. And now that one of the readers of her books has brought up this, and I've done my research into Chronicles, I wish I had translated from Shamuel, but I didn't. I translated from Chronicles. But here's what it says, and this is an amazing statement, because just a moment ago, I you know, the previous statement was Dode saying, you know, I have all of this stuff, you know. You know, now to the extent that I was able, I have established for the house of my God, gold for the things of gold, silver for the things of silver, bronze for the things of bronze, iron for the things of iron, wood for the things of wood, precious stones for mounting, and paints and pigments of various colors, well, of all kinds of magnificent and valuable stones and white marble and alabaster in abundance. And, you know, my first reaction when I read that is, oh, come on, Dode. You're really full of yourself here now, pal. None of that is because of you. Yeah, we made it available to you. And so stop making such a big deal. And then I realized, idiot, he's making a contrast. And the contrast he's making is what follows. He's essentially saying, okay, we got all this stuff, but this stuff is irrelevant compared to what I have been given. And this is what he says. And beyond what could be expected, in my fondness and acceptance of the household of my God, of the family of my God, there is the existence of a treasure of shimmering brilliance and a yearning, a sense of being tremendously wanted and desired that I have been given by approaching the house of my God. Higher and greater dimensions that are well beyond measure, exceeding anything I have prepared or provided for the set-apart home. It is brilliant. A comparison as ever was made. Here is the wealth of the world, and then he's saying, but beyond anything that could be expected, beyond anything that you would think, simultaneously, in my fondness and acceptance, boy, that's the key. Are you fond of Yahweh? Have you accepted Yahweh's family, his covenant?
Yeah.
Have you accepted what Yahweh has offered? Are you fond of it? Have you accepted it? If you've accepted it and you're not fond of it, it's not so good. You ought not have done that. If you're fond of it and haven't accepted it, that's just not going to get the job done. So use the word ba-ratash in my fondness and acceptance, my pleasure and my reception of the household of my God. Beth, the family of God. Yeah. For me. Now, one of the things about Dode is that Dode's writings are all personal.
Yeah, he personally.
I like that about him.
Yeah,
I like that about him.
Yeah.
What the inference is, when God says, Dode, you are Sadak, you're perfect, you are right. And when Yahweh said, this is my beloved son. And then you read of what Dode said of himself, what you ought to be seeing is, well, if my mindset, if my attitude, if my approach, if my conclusions are the same as Dode's, I'm in like
God's reaction would be the same.
God's reaction will be the same. So I like the fact that he made it personal. Dode is not lecturing to us.
Mm-hmm.
Dode is talking about his personal relationship with Yahweh. And he says, beyond anything that could be expected, in my fondness and acceptance of the household and family of my God, for me, there is the existence of a treasure, personal and valued possessions, an accumulation of, and the next word, zahab, means shimmering brilliance. And we're going to be transformed
it's
into light.
On the gold. I looked it up.
In a golden shine, what he is, there's a difference, you know. You ever buy those LED lights that have the blue cast to them?
Mm-hmm.
They're cold and irritating.
Yes.
Because I think they're cold and irritating.
The blue light is cool.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah. I like the warm light of the standard incandescent. I buy LED lights too, but my LED lights I always buy in the warmer, longer wavelength.
Mm-hmm.
Because I like warm light. I don't like cold light. And with Dode, when he talks about the shimmer of brilliance, the light reflected off of gold, light with a golden hue, that's what he's talking about. He didn't have the vocabulary to say, you know, I like the warmer Kelvin on my lights.
Yeah,
I don't really care for the cold blue hue, but that's what he's talking about, a warm light. The light of Yahweh is warm. It's inviting. That's when Yahweh says, you know, that he manifests himself as a flame of fire. Well, you know, yeah. Fire has the orangey, yellowish, golden hues to it. It's not only warm in terms of radiant energy, it looks warm. It's on the warm end of the wavelength of light.
Can I?
So the number one thing is.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
Please. No, I was going to say, in that very word, the reason I looked it up, it's a Zayin, a Hay, and a family home, the Beth, or the Bet. And it's like a pathway cut for the one who's standing in awe of the family home. I mean, guys, he's really good.
I mean, the man has a way with words.
Best letter or two I've ever
seen. You know, I've been having a few issues with the folks that are upset on how the written word cross versus the spoken word. Dode was a master.
Written language is a big darn deal. Who are you kidding?
Yeah. Dode was a master of both. But when it comes to knowing Yahweh, 100% of what we know about Yahweh is because of the written word. Dode wrote down the lyrics to these songs. And the beauty of them is that we can dig deep and find these valuable nuggets, this treasure, within the words itself, just like you did.
I don't think there's anybody that has a good enough memory. I know as I get older, my memory gets less and less as good as it once was. But I can turn to this stuff and relive it again and again and again and again. Why would you not think that's the most wonderful part?
Right. The more times you go over it, the more you learn.
Yes, right.
Every time you go over it, you learn more. For example, chapter 8, if I were to rewrite chapter 8 after going through each paragraph verbally, I mean, the commentary would be four times longer.
Yeah.
Than it was.
And I'd have to buy four times more paper.
Right. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I almost never read or share any of the commentary that I've written as part of these programs. It's all read the passage, talk about the passage. Because every time you read the passage, you see something new. You find something new.
Something else to be gleaned, yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so the only time I'll ever read is find like all that information on Zion and how many strides it was and these various things.
Yeah.
You know, that I'm going to read because, you know, I did the research. I found out exactly what it was. I don't have it memorized. That'll read. But Dode is saying the first thing is that he, as a result of his fondness and acceptance of the family of God, that for him, as a result, there was the existence of a treasure of shimmering brilliance. That was the first thing. I'm going to be transformed into light. Think about that.
Yeah.
And then what's the second thing? The second thing is, and this is it's just something that we don't give enough attention to. But Dode did. The second thing, that the great treasure is, he wants me. I'm wanted. I'm desired. I'm longed for. My presence is highly anticipated. You know, this is the creator God of the universe. And Dode recognizes that the second most valuable aspect of this relationship is God really loves me. He wants to spend time with me. He's looking forward to my arrival. Imagine that. God wants us.
Only by Yahweh.
Yeah. That's the second thing on his list. What a marvelous concept. That I'm wanted and desired. That I am given by approaching the house and family of my God. Number 3, higher and greater dimensions. that are well beyond measure, ma'al, greatly surpassing and extending upward in power and position. Ma'al is a cognate of Allah, not Allah.
Mm-hmm.
The ain, not the LF.
LF,
which means to go up, to ascend, to meet, to be withdrawn, and to excel. Ma'al, greatly exceeding and surpassing. Greater dimensions, well beyond measure. You know, and a lot of folks, you know, it just doesn't seem that impressive when you tell somebody, you know, you're a three-dimensional construct. Yeah, they understand that.
Yes.
And there is a fourth dimension we're aware of called time, but we're stuck in it.
Right.
We can't, our minds, unless you're Einstein, I don't know how he did it, but unless you're Einstein, you can't perceive how time is really a dimension. You can model it mathematically, but to understand it's extraordinarily difficult for us.
Mm-hmm.
And there are dimensions, 5 and 6, that are likely somehow associated with the things that we don't understand in the universe that make up 96% of the universe, called dark energy and dark matter. One is repulsive in nature, which would be choice. One is attractive in nature, which would be relationship. And that Yahweh, everything Yahweh tells us about himself is 6 plus 1, totaling 7. Yahweh is clearly a 7-dimensional being, and that he created a 6-dimensional universe, and we're currently in 3 dimensions. And to go from 3 to 4 isn't, you know, a 25% increase.
No.
It's an infinite increase.
Times itself and then some.
No. It's not a square. It's not a square.
I don't mean multiple like God.
Yeah, it's infinite.
Times infinity.
Yeah, it's an infinite increase. To go from 4 to 5 is an infinite increase multiplied by an infinite increase. And 5 to 6, an infinite increase times an infinite increase times an infinite increase. And, of course, the 7 is infinity to the 4th power.
Well, I tell you, it's difficult, Craig, as that is to understand. At least listening to you and Roy and reading what y'all write back and forth to each other has been extremely helpful for the most folks like me, where we can say, okay, I got a little glimmer, you know. But, I mean, I do work in a two-dimensional thing, so I do understand the Mickey Mouse thing probably as well as anyone.
Yeah, because you're an artist, and clearly Roy's understanding is much better than mine as it relates to dimensions. What I've come to know, I've largely learned from him. I wrote about dimensions and the Yahweh being a 7-dimensional construct and creating a 6-dimensional universe and what I thought those dimensions were long before I met Roy.
Yeah.
But I really did not have an appreciation for dimensionality until he presented it.
And so that
has been a huge help to me, mm-hmm. just understanding who God is and where we're going. Dode was writing about it here.
Mm-hmm.
Higher and greater dimensions that are well beyond measure. And they are these higher and greater dimensions, plural. We go from 3 to 4 to 5 to 6 and 7. So those are the greater dimensions that are well beyond measure because they're all a multiple of infinity, which is an amount beyond measure. And he says, then comparing it to what he's provided, he says, exceeding what I have prepared or provided. For the set apart home. So, by the way, the home, that it's not a temple, it's a home for the family that he is preparing, and it is Kodesh, set apart.
Yeah.
So, it's set apart from all other homes.
I don't think I was waiting for somebody to rebuild some temple.
No, Yahweh is not.
It's not on his agenda.
No, all those people that are part of the whacked out group of messianics, or some of them are Jewish rabbinical fundamentalists that think mm-hmm. that the Dome of the Rock has to be torn down and they need to build a new temple prior to their Jesus returning.
Uh-huh.
Not the case.
Mm-hmm.
Not the case. Yahweh's going to destroy it. He's going to destroy it with the earthquake and then wash it away. So all of the religious rubbish in Jerusalem will, just all of a sudden be gone. And then he's going to build his home. And I'm going to tell you, that home is going to be spectacular. It's going to be our home and his home. And it's going to be, I think, comprised of light. That's my my take on it. Yahweh, our God, all this abundance is from your hand. What abundance? The rubies and the gold and the silver? No. Being transformed into light. Being desired by the Creator God of the universe. Having our dimensionality, that abundance, is from your hand. That we have provided specifically for the benefit of the relationship. It is for building. Now, this would be the things that Dode has provided, even crediting Yahweh for that, for building you a house for your set-apart name. So the name is also Kodesh, all to approach you. Since I know, God, that you test the ability to be rational and discerning and continually accept, agree with, and delight in the integrity and correctness of my reasoning and judgment, have willingly offered all of these things. Now, to be fair, that is not how these words are translated in your KJV.
No.
Our good friend, JB, James,
yes, sir,
has done a comprehensive study on Leb, heart, or Hebrew word for heart. And what you find is that we use heart as a seat of emotions. So it's a place where we, you know, where you'd say this is our attitude, is a heartfelt thing. Our emotions is a heartfelt thing. And we consider that which we've taken to heart to be that which we have embodied and accepted as individuals. But in Hebrew, the liver was considered the seat of emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And the heart was considered the seat of judgment, the place where you examined and processed evidence so as to come to a conclusion that was that literally became part of you, that was incorporated into your various natures. That's why when Yahweh says that he's going to write his Torah on our heart, he's going to make the Torah integrated into our ability to exercise good judgment.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the Shafat, those who exercise good judgment, were exercising good judgment on the Torah. Heart is the ability to be rational and discerning. Seat of judgment, the ability to reason, to be circumspect. It is the seat of attitude and character of an individual. And ultimately to process information logically, to incorporate that understanding into the fabric of one's life. This is what a Leb is. Now, I'm completely open.
No,
somebody saying, you know, Noah just translated heart, and we should interpret heart the way heart today.
Listen,
even
I got inner mind, the seat of thought, the mind that's to think, the authority inside. Leb, of course, with the letters, you know, you have a
shepherd's staff.
Yeah, shepherd's staff leading you to the family home. You know.
Yeah.
It's correct. Beyond the field, the root comes from beyond the field of vision and time or space. I mean, I went through a lot of stuff. You know, that's you're not over exaggerating when you translate it the way you're translating. I mean, it is not the heart. That's just something that pumps blood. And who the heck? And why would Yahweh want to talk about? Okay, it pumps blood.
I am guaranteeing you. There's two things that are absolutely not true. God is not talking about the physical organ and using Leb. There is no chance he's talking about the muscle pump of the pump with muscles and valves. There's zero chance that that is correct. None. And in Hebrew and in these ancient cultures, the heart was not the seat of emotions. So he's not talking about emotions. absolutely no way in the world, and he's not talking about the physical organ. So right. If he's not talking about those two things, what is he using Leb to discuss? And why would you write a book of teaching and guidance on anything other than the place where you can exercise good judgment regarding it?
Point taken.
And what is Dode if he is not the person who has exercised good judgment regarding everything Yahweh has said?
He's the most rational guy in the book.
He is the most rational guy in the book. And what is the first word, the first verb of this statement? Yada.
Yeah.
To know, to acknowledge, to recognize, to be cognizant of, to be aware of, to have evaluated the information, to understand. It begins with yada. It doesn't begin with, oh, God, I feel my emotions, they're wrong.
I believe. No.
God, I love you so much. No. Since I know, my God, that you, since I know, God, that you test, you probe, you examine, you observe, you respond to, you assess, you scrutinize. The ability to be rational and to be discerning. Would he have used, do you think when he says you test that he's going to put that Dode was hooked up to an electrocardiogram? Do you think you were performing
for that?
Test?
Yeah.
To qualify for life insurance?
I'm glad you called Dr. Jeff.
Yeah, I did. He's a pulmonologist, but pulmonary surgeon. But yeah, okay. He could at least run one.
Yeah.
You know, do you think that he was saying, no, I'm going to give you a one of these tests to determine if you have a clogged artery or a valve is not functioning properly, so I can put in a pacemaker?
There you go.
So what is he going to test if Leb isn't the seat of judgment?
Yeah.
If Leb isn't the seat of judgment, it ain't a test. And it can't be a test that begins with the verb, I know. So, since I know, my God, that you test, you probe, you examine Leb, the ability to be rational and discerning, and continually accept, agree with, and delight in, Ratzah, are always pleased with and favor, enjoy and esteem, strongly desire being right, Misharim, being upright, being straightforward, being on the level, being correct, being fair and equitable, showing integrity, in agreement with the relationship. It's from Yashar, which means to be right, to be straight and level, to be acceptable, to be agreeable, to be approved. So the test is that Yahweh delights in, that Yahweh will accept regarding our rational decision making is being right.
Right. And I'd say even volitional. You have to really want to do this. You want to, and you have to come to know yourself, and you have to choose of your own volition.
Yes. Correct. And then it says, I in the integrity and correctness, Ba Yoshur, and the straightforwardness, honesty, and acceptable nature of my Leb, reasoning and judgment, have willingly offered, I have volunteered, there you go, Kirk,
there you go,
of my own free will and initiative to all of these things. So,
now, the good old King James would have an old bay in there somewhere. Just ain't there. I'm sorry,
it ain't there. Since I know, my God, that you test, you probe, you examine, you observe, you respond to the ability to be rational and discerning and continually accept, agree with, and delight in being right. I, in the integrity and correctness of my reasoning and judgment, have willingly offered all of these things. So what separates Dode. It's what makes him special. And so now, your people who are found here at this meeting, I have seen gladly and joyously approaching by freely and eagerly showing initiative concerning you. Now, there was a group of people at the time of Dode. I mean, it was obvious that Yahweh and Dode had a cozy, comfy, enjoyable, mutually beneficial relationship, and that Yahweh just happened to be God.
Well, the
so this was an
knew that.
Yeah, this was an extraordinary period of time. And so there's a gathering in Jerusalem because Dode wants to pass the torch. Yahweh said, okay, you're getting old, and so we're going to go to Solomon. You know, he already said, you know, I'm a little concerned about Solomon now. He's a little soft, a little young, a little naive, a little wishy-washy. But now all the people have gathered to pass the torch, and Dode is acknowledging, you know, you came here gladly and joyously, approaching, showing initiative concerning you. They weren't compelled. You know, this is not in a world of Islam where you either show up or they kill you, or medieval Europe, you either kowtow to the church or they kill you.
Or off to take you go. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, people showed up freely, eagerly, all of free will, and joyfully. They weren't cowering in fear. Yahweh, God of Abraham, Yishak, and Yisrael. It's interesting. He said Yisrael as opposed to Jacob, but they're synonymous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was
synonymous. Our fathers. Yeah, our fathers. I genuinely and emphatically means bluntly, boldly, unambiguously, want you to choose to focus upon and highly regard this forever concerning the purpose, inclination, and intentions of this thinking and judgment regarding your family, and prepare their ability to think, reason, and respond to you. Here's Dode's parting words to the community. And he's saying these in front of the people. And they're not a public prayer. He's just making a declaration.
He's declaring. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me ask you something.
Uh-huh.
What is so hard to the Christian world and the Yehudim when he says forever, La Olam, throughout eternity?
Uh-huh.
What is so hard with people when he says that? And he says, you know, I don't care whether it's Pesach or the Moed Mikras.
Right.
What is wrong? I mean, that
coming.
Was the thing
the
that
eternal,
my wife would say all the time.
Eternal,
we were, forever, O Lord, their word is settled in heaven, and then we'd say something else.
Right.
What is
it? So, yeah. How can the covenant in the Torah and the Moed Mikre be eternal and forever, and then God have a senior moment and say, no, none of it's
change
true. That was all a bad idea, and we're rescinding all that. We're replacing it with a New Testament. So you want to believe that God is incompetent, dishonest, capricious, untrustworthy? What is it? When he told you that the covenant was forever, and then you believe that the old one has been replaced with a new one, what's the justification for God lying?
How do you get around
it? And why would you trust it? Why would you trust a dishonest God? And why would you project dishonesty upon God?
Yeah.
Which is what Christianity does.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Exactly.
So here is those saying, yeah, well, God of Abraham, of Yishak, and of Yisrael, our fathers. And by the way, it's important. I know a lot of people have trouble with this. They don't want, particularly in Christianity and Islam, they don't want to associate Yahweh with Abraham, Yishak, and Yisrael, or Jacob. But that's how Yahweh wants to be known.
These
are his chosen people. This is his family. This is the witnesses he chose. This is the place he chose and the people he chose.
Right.
And to say that he's that Yahweh is the God of Abraham, and then Yishak and Yisrael to say, I'm the God of the covenant. This is my covenant family. You know, was he the God of Moshe? Yes. Did Moshe convey the terms and conditions of the covenant? Yes. But to say that he's the God of Abraham, Yishak, and Yisrael or Jacob is to say, I'm the God of the covenant, of the covenant, of the covenant.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's good.
Our fathers, yeah, and including Yahweh, I genuinely and emphatically choose to focus upon and highly regard what's happening here. Consider this forever. La olam, as you say, concerning the purpose, inclination, and intentions of the thinking, of the reasoning, of the rational thought, of the calculations, and the judgment, the abba, the attitude, the conscious thinking of your family. They got it right when they were around Dode. Dode was such a beacon of understanding. When they were around Dode, they got it right. But then he says, but prepare, fashion, and form, establish and sustain their ability to think, to reason, and to respond to you. Because that's the key. We need to continually be disciplined in our ability and willingness to think it through, to analyze what Yahweh said, to shamar is equal parts observation and contemplation.
Mm-hmm.
Closely examine, carefully consider.
Carefully consider.
That is what Dode is requesting.
Well, that's another reason the written word is so powerful, because you and I today are hanging out with Dode.
Here we are. And Dode's hanging with Yahweh, and we're hanging with Yahweh. Yeah, we're hanging with Dode and Yahweh.
When they were around him.
You're right. And very comfortable doing it.
There he is.
And using the brains that Yahweh gave us, the Nesama, this ability to exercise good judgment, to analyze what is being said here. And then Dode says, to my son, Solomon, that's Shalom, reconciliation and restoration from Shalom. Give the good judgment, boy. Judgment, judgment, judgment. Good judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Ability to think and to reason. To be reconciled.
You can't be judgmental. You know that, right?
Right. Judge not.
No.
Lest you be judged. Yeah. And to my son Solomon, just in case you didn't know that Shalom meant reconciliation
Shalom,
and restoration.
Yeah.
Shalom. Give Nathan the good judgment, the ability to understand reconciliation. And because it's Shalem. Shalem is from Shalom. It means to be reconciled and completely devoted to that which is accurate. Observing, Shamar, closely examining and carefully considering the mitzvah, the conditions of your covenant, your enduring and restoring testimonies. By the way, I think today I made a mistake when I was talking about Shabbat and Mishpat and said the Mishpat were the terms
Mishpat
and conditions of the covenant.
Mishpat,
the Mishpat.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Mitzvah that are the terms and conditions of the covenant. The Mishpat are the means that Yahweh used to justly resolve disputes and our ability to exercise good judgment regarding them. So,
well, that makes me feel better, because I thought it was Mishpat. I said, well, you missed that one.
One of the things that happens a lot when you're doing the spoken word versus the written word is you think one thing and you say another.
I do it all the time, the slip
of the lip. Now as I just read this, I say, oh man, I did goof that up this early this afternoon.
We'll forgive you that one thing.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, well, no, it's the. One of the reasons that, we're all less comfortable, we should be less comfortable with the spoken word than the written word. It's so much easier to make a mistake. And particularly since, so much like the program today, I'm reading your notes.
Yeah, that's right.
So that I know where we're going, so I can
ask. I'm trying to read my writing at the same time.
So I'm reading your notes while talking. And here I'm reading this statement while talking. And the mind is trying to control two different things at the same time. They're somewhat related, obviously, but we're very prone to make slip ups under those circumstances.
Well, also we're men, therefore not multitaskers.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Women are multitaskers. We're focusers. As men, that's a scientific fact proven by our eyesight. You know, as I said before, I've had LASIK surgery. And when I went into the doctor, I said, you know, I want the LASIK where you you adjust one eye to near vision, one to correct to far vision. That way, you know, I'll use the, and we just, the brain does it automatically. I'll not need glasses for either. So please adjust my eyes, one for near, one for far. And he says, if you were a woman, I could do that, and it would work for you. But as a man, all it's going to do is cause you to blur your vision. Yep. You will not be able to process it. And he says it's just part of your development. Women are multitaskers and can do that. Men are focusers. They cannot. So it's true. So observing, closely examining, carefully considering the conditions of your covenant, mitzvah. Your enduring and restoring testimonies, eduth. And your inscribed prescriptions for living, choke. And to act upon them all. Asha, to engage in the whole of them, so as to build the covenant home on the mount for which I have provided and prepared. You know, I look at the way that Dode provided and prepared for the home on the mount just up from his home, not in gold and in silver or precious stones or paints or timbers or bronze, but in a treasure of words about how to observe the Torah, what Yah was like, what he's looking for, what we should accept and act upon and consider if we want to enter that home that Yah has prepared for us. I think that's the treasure that Dode provided and prepared. I think he's second only to the Torah itself, that Dode's Psalms, his Mizmor, and his Mashal Proverbs are the greatest gift ever given to humankind.
Mm-hmm.
So he's talking about his son, and he says, you know, use good judgment regarding reconciliation and being devoted to accuracy by observing the conditions of your covenant. Number one thing, observing, closing, examining, five conditions of the covenant. Five benefits of the covenant.
Mm-hmm.
Your enduring and restoring testimonies, your eduth.
Yeah.
Eduth is from ed, which, by the way, means only witness, but eternal witness.
Those three words I looked at last night, and it was terribly interesting. I thought you would get a kick out of this. And I'm sorry, if you finish your thought, and then if we
no, go ahead. Okay.
Well, I looked them up in Miswa. Of course, the way it's spelled, of course, in the ancient, but also it means direction to go, serving or intended to guide, influence, and point the way. Eduth, witness, see the doorway, that which proves or disproves something, i.e. evidence. Chok, custom that is appointed for a specific time and a function. Obviously, Shamar is to closely examine. I found that as well. Carefully consider a close watching of something to preserve and protect it, i.e. like guard the sheep.
Right.
And then I contrast it with the Christian translation. It says, to keep the commandments, the testimonies, and your statutes. I mean, God, you know. I'm just sitting there going,
I don't have a problem with eduth being rendered testimonies.
Yeah.
Fact is that eduth, based on ed, is
means
enduring and restoring, and so it's inadequate, but it isn't errant.
No. Okay, I thought I was corrected on that.
Mitzvah is clearly instructive terms for a relationship agreement. You know, mitzvah does not include the term bereth, but there's only one relationship agreement that Yahweh speaks of. So it's the conditions of the covenant. You want to just define the words. It's instructive terms of your relationship agreement would be mitzvah. And choke. Now, it's one of these, by the way, are terms that Yahweh, that Dode uses throughout the 119th Psalm. But choke is that which is engraved. that which is chiseled into stone, that provides a prescription for living. They cut into the relationship. A powerful term.
Yeah.
And to act upon them all, he says. To act upon, to engage in the whole of them. So as to build the covenant home on the mount.
Well, even the letters were significant. I mean, you know, it was just, it blew me away. I mean, I got all that too. I was just looking for what else is
there.
Yeah.
So which word was your favorite of the letters?
Well, on the it do with, you've got an I looking at the doorway, increasing, and then you have a T, which is a mark.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool, right there.
Yeah, the I. So that means to focus, to observe, and so this is a restoring testimony, is an enduring witness. So to observe,
when you're
make that be your perspective, and then the left is a doorway, and then the TH is the mark or the signature.
Yeah. So all of them, the choke is of course a chit, you know, which separates or protects, or it could keep out or could protect. It increases you, and then you have a cue, which is, you know, is the horizon, the future,
right?
The eternity.
Right.
I mean, those
are looking out out towards infinity.
Yeah. So I mean, wow.
Yeah, the marvelous terms. The alphabet describes the words themselves. You look at to build, bana. You know, it begins with the same letters as bn, child, with the family home, and the sperm with the nun. So, Beth, family home, nun is the sperm, the seed of human life, and ends with the hay, which is the person growing from this sperm to an individual standing up, looking up, and reaching up to God.
Right. Very good. Very good. Yes.
Building the family home. They are powerful, powerful terms.
And, I just felt how creepy the King James.
Keep as opposed to observe. I mean, to have Shamar translated keep, even though you can work keep into the definition, but it's only to keep your eyes open, to keep focused upon, so as to protect life. You know, that's the only place it means keep. But Shamar means to observe, to closely examine and carefully consider. And do you have to keep your eyes open? Yes. But does that mean keep in the sense of obey or do? No. He had a word for do later on. It's asa, which means to engage in, to act upon. You know, that was the word for do, not keep. And, of course, then Shema, they'll change Shema to obey, when all it means is to listen.
Yeah.
But then Dode said to all of those who had gathered for the meeting, please, bless, choosing of your own accord to greet and commend Yahweh your God. Please, choose to bless, choosing of your own accord to greet and commend Yahweh your God. He's right here with us. This would be a great time to just thank him. For all those in the community who had gathered for this reason approached and greeted, commending while continually appreciating and adoring Yahweh, the God of their fathers, and they were inclined to be set apart, and they made a declaration to this effect, to approach Yahweh and the King. That's why they were all gathered there. They were gathered to have a relationship with God. And they knew there was a special bond between Dode and Yahweh, and wherever Dode was, there was Yahweh. Wherever Yahweh was, there was Dode. And so as a community, they all gathered for this marvelous feast to celebrate what was probably the most important relationship in human history. You know, you could argue that the relationship between Yahweh and Abraham was the most important in human history. And I wouldn't argue against that. You could argue that the relationship between Yahweh and Moshe was the most important in human history. Some would argue that the relationship between Yahweh and Yosha was the most important in human history. Personally, I think the relationship between Yahweh and Dode.
Pretty fine things to say about Dode.
Boy, did he ever.
You have to jump over that hurdle.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, Dode models what it's like to be part of the covenant. You know, the terms and conditions of the covenant were established with Abraham, but the model for the covenant, the living representative of the covenant, the beloved son of the covenant, is Dode. And so if our ambition, and it ought to be part of Yahweh's family, to be welcomed into God's home, and to be loved like Dode, then he's the best example in the world. Ultimately, rational man that thought his way to God, that kept no prisoners. If somebody was in opposition to Yahweh, they were his enemy. And he suffered fools poorly. He was aggressive. He was in your face. But as it relates to Yahweh, it was all business. It was all, let's reason together. Let's think this through. Let's examine the evidence. What's important?
Well, you know, that's profound. Solve his way to God.
He thought his way to God.
Where can you find it anywhere other than the Torah?
Yeah, but that's what he did. He thought his way to
God. No, I know. It's just exactly what he did. It's
and then he was inspired to write about those experiences so that we, too, could think our way to Yahweh. And this is kind of interesting. He says that, and they prepared by slaughtering and butchering for the purpose of dining with Yahweh.
Yeah.
Sacrificial Party. Offerings for the people. Yep. And they were lifted up by offerings which elevate to Yahweh the next day. 1,000 bulls, 1,000 rams, 1,000 lambs, and their libations and animals prepared to be eaten in abundance for all Yisrael. So they ate and they drank, approaching the presence of Yahweh on that day with great gladness. And they conducted a coronation for Solomon, the son of Dode, a second time. And they anointed, which means they consecrated, ascribing fit for service, Yahweh as a leader and as rightful priest.
Yeah, that's a good start.
As leader and rightful priest. So, you know, you think about, wow, that's a lot of animals, 1,000 of this and 1,000 of that, and the like.
I like what
I did. I did a quick analysis. I was just curious. So while butchering 3,000 animals might sound excessive for a feast, it's not. On average, there are just over 1,000 meals per cow and 250 meals per lamb or ram. This number of animals would have fed 1,500,000 adults, about 20% of the overall population of Israel at the time. It was a feast. The people, they ate, they drank, they celebrated this occasion with Yahweh. There was an abundance of food and plenty to drink, and yet God didn't so much as take a sip or a bite. Although everyone had a great time, including Yah.
Including Yah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, so, 1.5 million people. That's, you know, it takes a lot to feed them.
And, takes a lot to feed them. Yeah, none of these animals were being slaughtered.
Going to have a feast.
Yeah, they weren't being offered up to God. They were being slaughtered
for
food.
Losing companionship.
Okay. Yeah, for food. It wasn't cruel.
Yeah.
I'm sure Peter would have had a conniption fit, but you know, it was just food.
Well, then they should go down to McDonald's and put a big ring around it and put their signs up. And they do that much in a day or in a year at least at a store. Come on.
Oh, yeah. It's a place like
that. You have to feed people.
You have to fast food people, yeah. Yeah, tens of thousands of animals for the food. Yeah, so then Solomon resided upon the throne of Yahweh as king succeeding Dodd, his father, and he was successful and prospered. All Israel listened to him. Now we'll pick this up in a couple of weeks, but and I won't be here next week. I'm going to be down in Texas for my son's graduation. Mm-hmm. So I won't be here. That occurs on Friday, so I'll be in Texas on Friday. So I won't be here next week. Scott's not going to be here, as you know, to do the mm-hmm. observation show, and so it'll be you and JB. I would assume on the Shabbat show, if you guys are up for doing it. Hope you are.
I certainly can if you want us to be here. Absolutely.
Oh, that'd be great. And you can choose just to continue on with the eighth chapter of observations, or pick anything that you'd like, including going to Shavua, which is upcoming. So whatever it is that you would like to do would certainly be fine with me.
That's good.
And I'm sure I'm going to get some more flack on conspiracy and taking 30 minutes out of the program to
almost said to you about next week. You ought to just shut it down for a week, see if everybody comes we can get their brains back.
I would certainly hope so, boy. But I don't think it should be shut down. I'm happy for you. I'm not the right guy if what we have done is collected a bunch of people that are promoting conspiracy theories, and 95% of us are in the 5% that believe these things. I went wrong someplace along the way.
Yeah.
And
if you're using y'all to be your credibility, give you credibility so you can promote that, then I don't blame you. Just walk away.
Very frustrating for me. It's frustrating then to read in the chat room somebody saying, "Oh yeah, well, chemtrails have been proven. They have this and that," and it's just, good God, forget it. It's just rubbish. All of this stuff. It sucks people in. They feed off of each other, and it's religious in the sense of being almost impossible to get out of that loop. And I know that Yosha, when he confronted the nincompoops of his day, he walked away from them.
Mm-hmm.
He just walked away from them.
Rather quickly, too.
He's got a lot more patience and a lot more at stake than you and I do.
Sure.
And really, what do you and I have at stake here? We love Yahweh, and so we want to share what we have learned from him. We hate man's corruption, and we want to free people from it. And we'd love to see the covenant family grow, but we're going to be in the covenant family, and it's not going to make an enormous amount of difference if there's 1,000 or 10,000, really.
No.
So Yosha had a lot at stake. He paid a dear price for us to be part of the covenant, and yet he walked away. He walked away. He couldn't reason with him, chose not to reason with him. He just walked away.
That speaks volumes to me.
Yeah. And I ain't that good. You aren't that good.
I'm nothing, pal. I'm just reading, going, wow.
That's really
impressive.
Yeah. I was just translating in Yirmiyah 23. It's one of my favorite passages. I'm actually retranslating the entire chapter for the 13th chapter of observations, because I'm chasing down shemek, the Hebrew word that is used to convey branch, but also vibrant growth. And, you know, when is he using it to reference Yosha? When is he using it to reference restoring the earth to the back to the conditions found in the Garden of Eden? When is he using it to talk about this transformation of life and having life more abundantly as part of the covenant family? He uses it in for all three reasons in different places. And so there is a reference to Shemech, the branching out and growing, in Yirmiyah 23. So, and I'm retranslating, and the first time I started talking about Ra'ah, shepherds. And these are shepherds that have misled the flock, and Yah is really upset with them. And I was thinking, do I put in shepherds here, or do I put in pastors?
Well, they always call themselves under shepherds, so yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, I looked up the word pastor.
Uh-huh.
And you know the word pastor is from the Latin pastor, transliteration of the Latin pastor. And the Latin pastor means shepherd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I've read that a long time ago, yeah.
Yeah, and so pastor is the perfect term to translate Ra'ah. Pastor. Pastors acting like shepherds, if you want to have the full connotation. And God's, you know, really displeased with them. And so, you know, you just take the time, and every time you go through it, you learn something new. And why God says, you know, what you're doing is childish. It's malignant. It's wrong. It's misleading.
It's really counterproductive. Use your phrase.
Right. It's just counterproductive.
It's
what I'm going
you
to
in
do.
A terrible place.
Right. I'm going to hold you accountable by assessing upon you all the things that you've done to victimize my flock. So you estranged them, you're going to be estranged. You misled them, I'm going to view you as misled. You were wrong regarding them, so I view you as wrong. You know, and then the next thing God says, okay, when I've taken care of them, they're gone. They've been vanquished. I disassociated from Yahweh. Then he says, then I'm going to deal with the remnant of my flock. And I'm going to call them out of every country on earth, and I'm going to be their shepherd. And the moment you think about Yahweh saying, I'm going to be their shepherd, and then you think of, well, what is the title God? Is it not the ram head and the shepherd's staff?
Walking, yeah.
Right. Ram's head and shepherd's staff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna be living with you as one of the sheep who is a shepherd. Powerful stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and who would think of God being a shepherd as opposed to God being, you know, religions, God presented as a fearsome Lord.
Lord.
But a shepherd lives with the sheep, walks with the sheep, eat with the sheep. There are no lords that are shepherds. Ever.
Yeah, well, that's why. So, when I think Dode, I think of Shepherd King in exactly that sense, because he walked among the people. Kings don't walk among the people like the pharaohs.
Yeah.
You know, they're Kadesh. They're separate. From
what was Yahweh's instruction to Dode? Shepherd my sheep.
Shepherd my sheep.
Right. Said that
to
when Dode got in trouble with Yahweh, well, what was the reason you didn't shepherd my sheep?
Yeah.
Yeah. What did Yosha tell Shimon Kefesh?
Shimon Kefesh, same thing.
Yeah, four times. You know, their last meeting, this was after the celebration of Mukurim, just before Shavua.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, Shimon of Yahuchanan, which his name is Shimon of Yahuchanan, shepherd my sheep. Shepherd my sheep. Says, you know, there's going to be someone that's going to grab you by the midsection and to try to pull you astray. Don't let them. Shepherd my sheep. It's what he wants. Shepherd, you know, what does a shepherd do? Lives with the sheep, protects the sheep, feeds
watches
the sheep.
Make sure they get fed.
Yeah, watches over them.
Good nourishing food.
Exactly.
For them.
Yeah, lives with them, enjoys their company. Takes long walks with them. And, you know, even as we've talked about the shepherd's staff that is in the word El for Almighty God. the shepherd's staff isn't the way that it's shown in religious circles, or even with the pharaohs of Egypt, who all always had that shepherd's staff. The popes always have it, but they always have it with the crook ends up,
down,
and it's kind of a walking stick, and the crook ends up. So, you know, they grab the bottom of it, and they can walk, you know. It's either a weapon or a walking stick. No, not with Yahweh. The crook end is down.
Right. You pull you out
and
of
all
the ditch,
crook end, right. It'll pull, yeah, it'll pull you out of the ditch back onto the path, or will help guide you when it's down, rescue you or guide you.
Right.
And so it's the business end of the shepherd's staff that Yahweh's got out, reached out to the people.
Yeah, it's very clear. I mean, if anybody can talk this deep and this clearly, that's amazing.
Well, yeah,
I mean,
we talked about this a moment ago,
I don't have words to express it any better. It's just clarity with which Yahweh presents His Torah is just okay. You cannot miss it unless you mistranslate it.
Yeah. Well, you look at Bana from Ben. And and all that the difference is to build the family name is that the person that is the conceived, shown by the sperm, is now standing up and reaching up to God and becoming someone who is an adult that can walk with God. But you just look at the first two letters, the Ben, and it's the home has one way in, and it's the top. The walls and the floor are solid. And the roof has one way in, one doorway in. It's from above. And if you look at the sperm, it's moving from right to left, from low to high. If you put that sperm next to the house or in the house, it's headed right to the light.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, then you end up with the person standing up, reaching up to God in Bena. I mean, it's just every aspect of it.
Yeah.
It's so profound.
It is.
The letters tell the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, how much flack happens. But I'm really at the end of my rope here.
I'll let it get you down, partner.
For conspiracy. Well, it doesn't. It doesn't get me down. It's just deflating. It's it takes all the wind out of your sails. When you take the wind out of a sailing ship, the ship doesn't sink.
No, it flounders.
It just loses its momentum. And God, I hope it's not true.
No. Well, it's been the most fun thing I do. I'm
not
doing that. Not on the page with this. This is just it's great stuff.
It is great stuff. Yeah, it's just so wonderful.
This is just more important. Even if there was a threat or something to that, that ain't that important. If you know everything about the mafia, who the hell cares? I mean, read the Valachi papers. Who the hell cares? I mean, I know they're dogs.
Right.
Let's talk about where life is, not where death is.
Right. You know, there's some people who will have the Roman Catholic Church through one of their institutions that would control and the world. No, it's just not the case. You know, it's evil. It's corrupt. Doesn't control the world.
No.
You know,
a lot of people
vying.
There's a lot of corrupt people, and they all vying over. They have to fight over each other, just like any bunch of tribes are trying to kill each other. So what?
I mean, I can tell you for certain that that Donald Trump, as the leader of the most powerful nation on earth, is not in lockstep with Angela Merkel. You know, the premier of Germany, which is the most powerful nation in Europe. And the head of the United States, they are not in agreement. They are not singing from the same hymnal.
No.
You know, and the leader of Great Britain and the leader of France, they aren't singing from the same sheet of music either.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea Putin's not on that same page. And the king of Saudi Arabia, he's not on that same page.
But
the idea that the whole world leaders, the elite, are all working together for the same goal, I'm telling you, it's just not true. It's, the Bohemian Grove is not controlling the world.
No.
Nor is the Council on Foreign Relations, nor is the Order of the Illumes, nor is Freemasonry.
No, even if they wanted to, they ain't. So they,
you know. No, they had some influence, yes, but do you think that, and clearly with Washington during the Revolution and Franklin, Freemasonry was a big deal, and all of his generals were Freemasons. It was a big deal. City
and
of Jefferson
was
the way it's laid out. I mean, it's big time Freemasonry. Jefferson wasn't a Freemason, but he had an affinity for the Jacobins. Today, to say that it's Freemasonry that is controlling the United States is preposterous. Yeah. I mean, look at the idiots that are Freemasons today. It's a club.
I was recruited one time out of college.
Look at these Shriners, which is, you know, the high level of Freemasonry. I mean,
and I'm going,
we are drunk
I'm not a joiner. Go ahead. Y'all go on without me.
Okay, so Billy Graham was a Freemason. So what?
Yeah. So what? He's a jerk anyway. He put on the wrong horse to begin with. So.
He did. Yeah, so what? You know, I don't get it. It's one of those things that, so if it's true, let's just say that wildly phenomenon that that the U.S. government is poisoning the world through the fuel that goes out of the exhaust of airplanes. And that one part per trillion at 30,000 feet is somehow going to be an effective measure of mind control. I mean,
I think to kill bugs, you have to fly real close to the ground. So it's got to be with CDC. So, come on. Anyway.
Oh, goodness. You know.
But they got free will. That's what you want to think. Fine. But, geez, people.
Yeah, come on. It's just, it's so utterly preposterous. And what it does is the same thing that religion does. We'll focus on some things that we won't ever really think about rationally, but we're going to ignore the big picture. The simplest explanation, that can't be true. And it's all the evidence that planes flew into those buildings, and we see it with our eyes, and the planes no longer exist. No, that can't be true. It had to be missiles or thermite on the columns, or this government that can't do anything right actually organized and perpetrated 9/11 and then kept anybody else from, except the truthers, from knowing it. It just hurts.
Yeah.
All of it hurts. You know, the government would perpetrate Sandy Hook. For what reason?
Well,
the Pace Bike Club. It didn't happen, no. The government, false flag. Say what? Why? And how does the government pull it off? Well, they have political actors. That's their job.
Listen, they couldn't put all the things they did to create, to get us into certain wars, you know, like Vietnam and so forth. Or,
right.
Like,
didn't happen. But it's a well-known fact that it didn't happen.
Well, that's the worst thing in the world. I used to hate that in college, and I would argue all the time. Now, I knew when to shut up and just feed back the information they wanted, because I needed to make straight A's so I could stay in class, because I only could afford a short period of time, so I took overloads. But I used to hear this stuff, and the professors would say this, and everyone knows that this is such and such and such. And I say, no, they don't.
No, they don't.
I can give you five books.
A great example of a something that very few people know that sounds just crazy when you say it.
Mm-hmm.
But the evidence is overwhelming for it, is that anthrax was the source of the Spanish flu.
Well, we thought
it was. That it was a German national in America that tested it with the border patrol along the Mexican border and found that it had like a 90% fatal fatality rate with horses and about 70% with the troops on those horses. And that Wilson and Colonel House got wind of it and decided to test it on people, and did it at the Kansas Recruiting Center for troops marching to go to Europe. And he infected them with it, and they went over to Europe and infected Europe with it, and over 100 million people died.
So they could reorganize the way they want, redraw the lines of everything in Europe.
Right.
That makes him one of the biggest mass murders in history.
It does. Yeah, my son and I were talking about Woodrow Wilson. My son is, you know, has a PhD in medicinal chemistry. He understands this stuff. He has also independently researched Woodrow Wilson. He puts Woodrow Wilson in the top five most menacing people of all time. You know, he's of the conclusion that Paul is the single most despicable person on earth. When, you know, when God ranks and does trials of most despicable to least despicable, that Paul will be, clearly, with probably 10 billion souls,
be
the most despicable. And my son has Muhammad as his second most despicable, and Hadrian is probably third most despicable. But he has in his top five Woodrow Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
No one killed more people.
Yeah,
and he has Woodrow Wilson ahead of Hitler.
Yeah. Well, Hitler couldn't do that much damage.
No.
Seriously, I mean, that guy was that was bad news of all bad news.
Yes. Yeah, he was a real scumbag, Woodrow Wilson. You know, president
and,
of
and they sing his praises to this day. It was a show not too long ago, and I kind of got sick just looking at the commercial.
Yeah, you know what's amazing too is they know now that he was a racist, so they've begun to pull his name off of buildings in Princeton. But
really?
You know, he has a library in I think it's Stanton, Virginia, is just across the Blue Lake Bridge from Charlottesville. And, you know, every time I just drive by it, I want to cringe. You know, he's the one that created clandestinely the Federal Reserve, and think of the damage it's done. The federal income tax is another one of his. Got us deliberately created the hoax of the sinking of the Lusitania.
Lusitania,
It was deliberately.
This guy was nothing. He didn't
justify.
Do.
Yeah, World War One, where so many Americans died. To justify banking interests, J.P. Morgan in particular. So there are some things in history that are worth exposing and condemning. They're few and far between.
No, we got plenty of enemies to throw rocks at. We don't need to find makeup ones.
No. I do enjoy, though, doing exposés on Americans like Ulysses S. Grant, for example, Abraham Lincoln, who was the antithesis of what he is enshrined to be. I mean, he was an overt racist, and it is I think that doing that has the advantage of helping people know that America has never been great. That, you know, it's been led by scumbags for a very long time. And I think that there were some, like, I think Jefferson was one of the most brilliant people in human history. He wasn't right about everything. He was wrong about many things. But, man, that guy, he had a great ability to think and understand. So there was some.
Well, he knew what would work and what absolutely would not, you know, and he stood his ground on a lot of things, so. So
yeah.
I don't disagree with you. It's just a shame that a brilliant mind like that didn't get hold of the Torah.
Yeah, I know. It would have been, resources are so much more available to us than they were for him. He at least knew, contradicted Yosha, and he removed everything Paul said from his accounting of what Yosha said it did.
I've seen the book where he cut it all out. I mean, I've seen his
cut it all out. Yeah, and then he wrote to a friend and said that, you know, Paul was the first to corrupt the message of Yosha. He had it figured out.
Was that Madison he wrote to?
Yeah, I don't know who that letter. No, that letter I don't think was to Madison. Madison, his concerns when he wrote to Madison was over the Second Amendment. Didn't go far enough to cover his concern about the establishment of a military.
He understood Samuel's point of view, didn't he, when you always told Samuel, don't have a king.
Exactly, don't have a king. And because this is what the king's going to do, and the first thing he's going to do is create a military. and then he's going to use it. Yes, indeed.
I agree with you on all that about exposing America so that Americans will stop this nonsense about what they believe and or what they have faith in, because it's not a belief, because belief has got to be based on some facts. And the facts are that America really has made every bad choice you can make. And it's so obvious. I'm just so disappointed in a generation of mine that grew up with the Vietnam War and they understood the government was rotten, and all of a sudden now they're patriotic up to the teeth and send their children off to war and their grandchildren off to war. What happened?
Yeah, what happened? Yeah, what happened in America that all of a sudden caused both the left and the right to become pro-military?
Yeah.
Because right now the left
is
pro-military as the right is. What happened?
Yeah. I just, this is numbing. It's just dumbfounding.
I just got an email from JB, I guess, who came in right at the beginning of the show. He says, guys, I'm sorry for the late notice, but I burnt my hand really bad with some boiling water. I don't think it's too bad, but I'm in a bit of a pain and distracted by it, so that's why JB didn't join us.
Yeah. Yeah, screaming and hollering probably wouldn't help, but I'm sorry.
Yeah, I hope he feels better. That's such, you know, just
nice
amazing
it, yes.
how 1 second can change, a period of days. The only worse than boiling water is steaming water. Steam has got more energy than boiling water does in terms of doing damage. But boiling water, man, that stuff, you'll get a third-degree burn in a hurry.
Sure.
And you know what the best treatment is for a burn?
Ice.
Yeah, immediately put the burn under either very cold water or ice.
Yeah. Yeah, because back in the old days, you just put butter and stuff. All you do is cook the butter.
Yeah, I know. That's not good. Cold water or ice over it.
You
got to
lower the temperature and you got to cool it down.
Yeah, it's not going to go away, but it'll mitigate the damage. Yeah,
absolutely. Help. Inflammation, the same thing. Put it on your shoulder if you're hurting. Yeah,
absolutely. All right, my friend.
Well, have a wonderful time.
JB
and I'll do something, hopefully Shabu, and we'll talk about that. It won't be as, obviously as good without you, but we'll hold it for it till you get back, and we'll look forward to it. Y'all have a wonderful time. I wish everybody well and your families.
Sure will.
Yes, sir.
Good night, my friend.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.